So let's take a few moments to just establish ourselves once again in the seating posture, taking our seat as if for the first time ever in our entire life, and sitting with that degree of intentionality. And awareness. I haven't said much about posture, but if you are sitting, try to sit in a way that, especially on the floor, that elevates your rear end off the floor and a little bit higher than your knees. Now, if you cross your legs, there are a number of different ways to do it, one of which is to just hold one leg and then hold the other one flat in front of it. Sometimes you try to do that and it goes like this instead, because it takes a long time for the ankles and the hips and the knees to learn to collaborate in sitting in this way. The whole idea is to, and then of course you could do more. You could bring one foot up on the other thigh, and you could bring the other foot up in the full lotus. I don't recommend that to you. But some kind of, you're creating some kind of stable base. And then, of course, there are benches, so you could be kneeling on a bench. And, of course, there are chairs, and there's nothing wrong with sitting on the chair. And if you do have a chair to sit on, then you have a number of alternatives, one of which is to not sit against the back of the chair like that, but to sit a little bit away from the chair, and in either case, not crossing the legs, but just keeping the feet flat on the floor. And again, a kind of dignified, rooted posture, so that the pelvis itself, whether you're on the floor or whether you're on the chair, is stable, and the spine can come out of the pelvis in a kind of forward-moving arch up into the thoracic spine and then the cervical spine, with the natural curves of the spine, and then as if you're being lifted up by the top of the head. So you're sitting mountain-like, so to speak. Very stable. And that's more an inner attitude than it is just the posture, but the posture can be very supportive of that inner attitude. So if the mountain image is helpful to you, then sitting like a mountain, unmoving, even though the weather patterns and the seasons can bring all sorts of changes to the mountain sits through everything, being itself. And as I said, if you want to, if you need to lie down, you want to lie down, then lying down is fine. Standing is fine. Slow pacing at the back would be fine. The important thing is to make yourself at home. This is our space for these 2 days. And the most important thing is to be available to yourself. And however that works best. Now, in terms of various conditions, whether it's other people snoring and keeping you up at night, or whether it's the food, the quality or the quantity of the food in the dining room, of course, nobody's happy when these things occur. But how we hold them will be very important. So the fact that you've communicated to the staff about them, at this point, let it go and let the staff take care of it as best as we can. Otherwise, you'll agitate your own mind over something or other, whether it's food or the room conditions or whatever. This retreat's, you know, going to be over shortly. I mean, you could say it's half over. It's hardly begun. It's like an airplane trip where you get up and you go down. But a lot can happen if we're in our present moment, because between now and the time the retreat ends tomorrow, there will be an infinite number of moments to a first approximation. can we inhabit them? Now, one question I have for you is, am I speaking too fast? My English okay? You can understand it when I speak like that. Okay. So why don't we take a few moments to just settle? And the invitation is always, how many of you have sat Vipassana retreats or Zen retreats or Dzogchen retreats? Okay. So you may have a certain idea about retreats, one of which is we tell you how long we're going to sit. Are most of you used to like knowing when the beginning and the end of a sitting is going to be? We never do that in MBSR. And it's not because we're mean and cruel. But, you know, we don't want to develop complacency around sitting or any of the other practices. So when we are practicing in the hospital, when we're practicing together, it's always now. And it will end when it ends. And so rather than thinking, oh my goodness, when is the bell going to end? When is the bell going to ring? We just stay with this moment. And you don't know whether it's going to be 5 minutes or 35 minutes or 45 minutes. There's something very, very healthy about that. You just don't know. And the only recourse is to be in this moment. And so we exercise that muscle. And you can notice how much you want to know when the bell's going to ring. And as best you can, just noticing that. So let's drop in once again to the present moment, on the present moment. And we don't know how long we'll be here, but maybe we could just be here forever. Or for no time at all, just now. And then now. And now, now. And just allowing your attention to alight on the breath, to slowly, gently alight on the breath sensations in the belly or at the nostrils. And just rest in awareness of breathing. And if you care to, expanding the field of awareness to include not just the breathing, but a sense of the body as a whole sitting here breathing. Mountain-like. Fully awake, fully present, and with no agenda. We're not striving to get someplace else. We're allowing ourselves to be where we already are. And let me remind you, even though sometimes the conditions may not seem optimal, that every single person here chose to be here. So here you are, and this is it. So this is the curriculum for now. And that means everything that comes in this moment. Whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant, or whether it's neither. So simply riding on the waves of the breath and resting in awareness of the whole body sitting here breathing. And you've heard me emphasize it before, say it before, as if your life depended on And of course we know that our lives depend on the breath, but our lives in a very real way, especially the quality of our lives, the direction of our lives, the health and well-being of our lives, our social connections, actually depend at least as much on our ability to show up, to be present, to be fully in this moment, in the body, and aware of what's going on inwardly and outwardly, without an agenda to make it different or to improve on ourselves or to get anywhere else. It's a deep gesture of generosity and kindness and love to recognize that where you are is fine. For now. And can we be here fully? Without any forcing, without any striving, without setting up ideals. So when people come to the stress reduction clinic for the first class of MBSR, and how many of you have been through a whole course of MBSR with Dino or somebody else? Great. So as you'll remember, in the first class, ordinarily you might start with talking about why people are here. And then, you know, we go around in a circle, because it's done in a circle, usually, rather than like this. And then we might engage in the, with a little introduction, then engage in the eating meditation, the raising. And then move from there to the floor and experiment with, remember, we put our hand on our belly and we felt the breath, and then we took the hand away and found that we could feel the breath without the hand. And then right into a body scan, and then people go home at the end of the class for a week of practicing the body scan. And then they come back, and then we do another body scan usually, and then we talk about it. So I'd like to actually talk about your experience of the body scan this morning. Now, we have four wireless microphones on order, but as far as I know, they're not here yet. We also have supposedly going to be repairing the Madonna microphone, because I'm going to need it to lead the yoga, and it's not here yet either. So this is the way things go. I would really like to invite you to speak about your experience of the body scan. If you want to come up and use one of the microphones, you're welcome to do that. If you want to really find your voice and speak out so that we can all hear you, then you're welcome to do that. Probably it's helpful to stand if you're going to do that, because you can project your voice better that way. So just reflecting back on the body scan we just did, not all the body scans you've ever done in your life, but this one right here this morning. Anybody have anything to observe about it? Anything that you noticed or that surprised you or that you had trouble with? Anybody? How many of you did fall asleep? Okay, so a lot of people fell asleep, but you were very good about not snoring. That's very good. I don't know how you developed that skill, but or maybe you were and I just didn't hear it. So, as I said, sleep is an occupational hazard of any lying-down meditation. And you can talk about that, too. Did you stay asleep the whole time, or did you move in and out of sleep? What was your relationship to that? But anybody who cares to comment about your experience with the body scan, what you struggled with, what you might have learned, what you saw, what you felt, how it was for you. You. I didn't do it. You did it. Yes, please. You have to get closer to the
microphone. Beautiful. It was like a lullaby. I could follow your voice very nice and the soothing and the comforting, but it didn't mean anything. It just was a voice. visualize my problem in his house. Being a snail, I know exactly how it looks. But I couldn't see it. And I know it's clear from my meditation, especially visual practice, that whenever I see, I lose my control of the body, of the arms, of the heart. And I can't find it. It's like dissolving into the space. And it happens again. As long as it's not pain or strain, they are not existing.
Do you mind if we have a little conversation right now? Is that okay? So you're standing here. Can you feel your feet in touch with the floor?
Yes, because I'm very tense.
Because you're very tense. Okay, so now you can feel your body, right?
Yes.
If I asked you to put your attention in your belly, could you feel it now? You can feel all the sensations.
All of it.
And it's only because you're tense.
I have pain, strain.
Okay, so when you get very relaxed, it's not like you fall asleep.
I'm like a cloud.
Okay, and you can't find the body. All right.
Even I can visualize it when you ask the...
We understand that you're a nurse, you can visualize it and everything. But actually, you're not feeling it.
No.
Do you want to feel it?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you also said that... did you say that you... fell asleep or
no,
it wasn't
I
like
wasn't
but my voice
before.
Yeah, but it didn't mean anything to you.
But I couldn't put any
meaning to it. It's just a voice.
Okay. And it didn't mean anything.
Okay, so next time we do the body scan, try doing it standing up. Then you'll hear my voice. Then you'll feel your body. And don't worry about pain or strain or stress or tension. This is a strategy, so to speak, for getting back in touch. And if it's important enough, we should take any strategy that is, not going to hurt us. Even if it may bring up a little bit more discomfort. It's obviously harder to stand than it is to lie down. But if standing will bring you back into the body, then let's try it at least once or twice standing, and then see if you can kind of do it sitting, and then see if you can do it stretching out. Because you're essentially attempting to reclaim your body. And you don't need, my voice is not really relevant. I mean, my voice is one way to do it, but really you don't need my voice. Do it yourself. Now when you do the body scan by yourself, can you feel your body part?
Yes.
You can?
No, I can't.
You cannot?
I can do it, moving from one
region to the body, the body to another.
And also I can see
the organs.
The gland running in my brain.
The blood, okay. Hearing aid, her hearing aid. Why don't you put it over here? Okay, anyway, so it's something to work with. In other words, you experiment with what will work for you. You know what I'm saying? If it's important enough. Learning how to live inside the body again is very important. The French word rehabilitation, the word rehabilitation comes from the French verb habiter, which means to live inside. To j'habite, to I dwell, or live inside. So rehabilitating our bodies means to learn to live inside again. Yeah, it's also to re-enable when you're in an accident, you have to recover your capacities. But deep root meaning is to live inside again. So the more we can exercise those muscles, the more you will reclaim your body. And all of the information, including the cloud, is useful. There's nothing wrong with the cloud. But if it clouds your relationship with your body, then you may want to investigate the cloudiness more. Okay? Thank you. Raise it up, yeah.
This is interesting this time because I'm pregnant.
Ah, you're doing body scan for two.
Yeah. And I felt all the moving of the baby. And then I felt starting to be excited about it. And I said, oh, I'm going to do more, I'm doing more. And the body scan. And then I felt, oh, thinking. because usually I do more than the rest. Yeah, and some parts I felt in my body.
So was there a particular connection to your being pregnant?
Yeah, and afterwards also when I went to the hunt, I saw that I'm more connected to it. And like when I ate, I'm really also
there. So in a sense, greater connection, greater awareness of what you're carrying.
Yes.
And the fact that there are two of you. Right. Thank you.
I had an interesting experience. I just night and I did the retreat. And when I woke up, I just got out my conference right here.
Yeah.
But I woke up a little late, so I went into another conflict, and doing the body scan, what was like an awakening experience for me is that I kept on falling asleep and waking up at the beginning, and I noticed that I'm having conflicts that are not mine. Someone, an African boy, or a woman's conflict, like voices in my mind, that's your mind. And when I woke up from it, I was really weird to acknowledge it, that was what was going on. And then when I had my conflict, that I had to fall asleep, or my leg fell asleep, or whatever, I felt like that's not my conflict either.
Generating another story.
Yeah, and that was really an awakening experience to know that just a conflict moves.
And if you're not taking any of it personally, like the African boy or the woman or, you know, or your own, you know, whatever, if you're not taking any of it personally, then there's no problem with any of it. It's just arising stuff in the mind. And that itself is, in some sense, gives you more of a perspective on what's unfolding for you.
Yeah, because I knew there was a link between the dream and then the morning conflict, which I could notice it dissolving at some point. I had this guilt feeling about waking up late, and then disappeared. And then the other people's thoughts in my head disappeared the moment I noticed it. And then my conflict also disappeared more quickly, and I just understood the conflict.
That's a beautiful insight. The Tibetans often teach in a way that emphasizes not a continuity of mindfulness, but brief moments many, 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 many times. So, am I here now? Yeah. And now? Yeah. And now? No. And now? No. And now? Yeah. And back and forth, back and forth. So, you can do that not in a sort of stressed way, but in a kind of just checking from moment to moment. And when you don't take any of it personally, then none of it really controls your life anymore. And you don't need to have any conflicts, and I think you just saw that. And then a lot of room opens up to actually live your life.
During the body scan, I really tried to stay awake. It was so hard. I just kept calling in. Sleep and waking again, and going to sleep and waking again. And at first, I felt a bit disappointed because I said, that's it, I do the whole retreat. I fell asleep during the body scan, what would I do now? And then I realized that I can just feel the way I'm feeling about going to sleep and I can concentrate on how my body feels in response to this. And that's when I realize that there is no narrative self, no experiential self, there's only one self, and there are all intertwined and intermingled, and it's so easy to go from one to the other. At the moment, I can experience something, it's in the moment, but in the next moment, I can think about it, and then it's no more the present moment. And also the other way around, if I think about something and then become aware that I think about it, it becomes the present moment. It's very fluid and it goes from one side to the other side.
And what's the one constant throughout?
Me. I'm 21.
What about awareness?
Yeah. My awareness.
Never mind your awareness. What about just awareness? So investigate this. I mean, I'm just sort of trying to provoke you a little bit. To look underneath the I, me, and mine. You know, is it my awareness or is it just awareness? Is it my thinking or is it just thinking? You know, a lot of times we attach to them as if it's my thinking, you know, and my voices, or these are not my voices. Where the hell are these voices coming from? But if we step back from that and just watch it, then maybe there's a whole other dimension of being that we are missing because it was never pointed out to us. And our thinking was really pointed out to us. I mean, we all trained in thinking, so we're very good at thinking. But this is new territory for us. So, yeah, in that sense, falling asleep becomes your teacher. It's not like you have to be perfect at anything or that falling awake is better than falling asleep. If you're aware of falling asleep, it's the same awareness as the awareness of falling away. It's the same awareness. If you're aware of pain, it's the same awareness as the awareness of pleasure. So if we learn to actually inhabit the awareness, then our relationship to pain, to suffering, to pleasure, to thoughts and emotions becomes much more fluid, and we have much greater sort of perspective on it and ways to interface with it that could be potentially beneficial and creative and imaginative and therefore freeing. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll just take it out.
Okay, so I felt it's all the time I'm feeling like this, but I have a question about it that I felt that sometimes I manage to be aware on it and then become some in the fog. I feel it that I have no chance against it. Like, I'm so used to think and so even if I be aware sometimes.
Right.
So it's like, it's a war I can't fight against because
you always lose.
Yeah, another thing is it takes for me a lot of energy to be aware.
Yes.
I'm really tired after the session. So, my only question is, do I really have a chance? Or,
are you asking, does it get easier?
Maybe.
Do you have a chance? Okay. Do you really want to know? Yeah, you have a chance. If you didn't have a chance, I wouldn't be here. None of these people would be here, and you wouldn't be here.
Oh, but we are so used to think. We are so used to be here.
Well, how many years of school did you go through?
12.
And were you taught well? You were really taught well, huh? To think.
Thinking.
Yeah, so you got better and better and better at thinking. So how many years of training in awareness have you gotten? Zero. How long have you been meditating?
2 months.
2 or 3 months, okay. So there's lots of chance, okay? You have lots of hope. You don't need to worry about this. It's something that develops with time and is at the same time timeless. So I keep emphasizing, you don't have to try to get anywhere. This is so simple that it's more a matter of getting out of our own way rather than trying to construct some new thing like new perspective or new thought. So it's right here all the time And at the same time, as I said last night, it's the hardest work in the world for us human beings to cultivate that muscle of attention or the capacity to rest in awareness. So how many other people here, just to ask, how many other people here find it rather challenging to do this practice? Raise your hand. Okay, I want you to look around and see everybody raising your hand. Okay, so you're not alone. It's not that there's anything wrong with you. This is not easy. But what's the alternative? Let's say you didn't do this. What would the alternative be? You'd be thinking, thinking, thinking all the time. And does thinking always help you?
Sometimes.
But sometimes...
makes it worse.
Okay. So this gives you a whole other angle on how to live life. It's not like we're trying to suppress thought at all, but to make much wiser use of it. Okay? Thank you. Thanks for coming up and asking that. Can you hear?
But the Vatican was the most difficult for me. So difficult that time was the neck, I left the room. And I thought about it now when
you physically walked out of it.
Yeah. I thought it when you said it, you don't just say how long you're going to be. But the Vatican is the only meditation that from the beginning I know when it's going to end. No. When we are start with the leg,
no,
then I think, oh, now we have to go to the other leg and then to the other leg. We are going back, and I know when it's going to end because in there.
Well, you don't know when it's going to end, you know where it's going to end.
Yes, and I think you are right that it's very difficult when you know from the beginning when it's going to end.
Well, thank you. So can I ask you, why did you leave the room? What got you out of the room?
Because I
Yeah, it's a good thing we don't have 1,000 arms and 1,000
arms. So how many of you felt during the body scan that I was going too slow? Raise your hands. It's like, oh my God, when the hell are we ever going to get to that? Yeah, so... this is why it's important to stay in the present moment. It's like as soon as we have the idea we're going someplace, then we start to criticize how fast or how slow we're going. Okay, we get it. Just hurry up. Why do you have to go so slow? You know, we could spend an hour on one arm. One arm. I did both arms together. I was compassionate. You could say, well, you weren't that compassionate. You could have done both legs together. And sometimes we do. But it's not about time. It's about the timeless. And we're so caught up in time that we get impatient. We want this to be over so that we can have the next experience. That's like having food in your mouth. And you put more food in your mouth before you finish this food because you just, we're eating for some other reason than real hunger in the body. We're maybe eating for psychological hunger or to feed some other desire that's far more than just the need for the body to have food. So it's really, that's one of the reasons the body scan is so long. People keep asking me, well, why did you make a 45-minute body scan? And this body scan was longer than 45 minutes. It was more like 55 minutes, maybe 60 minutes. And it often is when we do our professional training programs. Because it really is about not about time at all. It's about can we be awake in this moment. And people say, well, why did you make the body scan in MBSR 45 minutes? Why didn't you make it like 20 minutes or 10 minutes? And the answer is, I wanted it to be long enough so that every conceivable mind state and body state would visit you, including impatience and boredom. So how many of you felt impatient? You said you wanted to get, need to get going faster. Raise your hand, five. All right, so we can feel it. Yeah, okay, great. So then you get to watch your impatience. That becomes the curriculum. Impatience is a mind state, right? And if you've never heard of mindfulness, if you've never heard of meditation, if you've never heard of the body scan, do you think you would still sometimes experience impatience? I think so. Okay, so it doesn't really have to do with meditation. But the meditation allows us to like have a laboratory for impatience. Okay, impatience has come up, now we're going to investigate it. Why do I need to hurry through the knee to get to the thigh? Who cares? If I'm here or here, what difference does it make? Or if we're finished up here. We decided we would be at this kibbutz for 2.5 days. So if we hurry up with the body scan, then it'll just be something else. Or it will be dinner. And then, or lunch, and then there won't be enough food anyway. So why not just stay with, or it won't be what you like. So why not just stay with the knee for now? So can you see that this is actually training the mind to be freer, to be less attached to concepts and ideas about how things should be and allow them to be as they are. Now, of course, I could make the body scan 30 minutes, and sometimes I do, but even 30 minutes, people get impatient. Why did it take so long? If it's 30 minutes, it's too long. If it's 20 minutes, it's still too long. It's always too long, because we're never willing to just be here now. So the body scan is long so that people who are brand new to meditation, which most of our medical patients or people in MDCT, they're not like you, in the sense that they may never have heard of meditation, or they think it's weird, or they think it's some new age, sort of craziness. But they're willing to try it because, for the most part, because they're suffering, they're in so much pain, they'll try anything. And as I said, we want it to be long enough so that they get to experience all of the various mind states and body states, including significant pain and discomfort, come and linger and go, and we move through regions of pain. I'm sure that some of you in the room have significant chronic pain. Some of you have told me that. So unless you talk about it, I'm not going to bring it up, but how you move through a region of pain is incredibly valuable practice. It's training the mind to actually enter rather than turn away from what's most difficult. And we've seen in hundreds and thousands of chronic pain patients that can make an enormous difference in how learning how to live with a pain that there's no surgery to make it go away. Well, you've had 3 neurosurgeries and you're in more pain. Now what are you going to do? There's nothing left in medicine. But this meditation can actually be a lifesaver. And so we are relating to our patients as if they are geniuses, as if they can actually throw themselves into the meditation practice, give themselves over to a 45-minute body scan, and learn how to be in the present moment. Then after 34 years of doing it without ever shortening the body scan CD, we have no reason to turn away from that perspective. People ultimately love to be met as if they have these kinds of capabilities and then to strengthen them by repetition over and over and over. Sometimes it might take people 6 weeks just to wake up in the body scan. But when they wake up, they really wake up. And they understand their body perhaps in an entirely different way. And the 6 weeks of sleeping may have been necessary. First of all, how many of you would say that you are sleep deprived, that the way you live your life, you don't get enough sleep? Anybody here feel that way? Yeah, I mean, it's probably as bad here as in America. You know, everybody's sleep deprived. We need much more sleep than we're getting. So here comes John Kabat-Zinn, we have a body scan. Great, go to sleep. That's not bad. I mean, we need sleep. We need lots of sleep. We probably need between 8 and 9 hours of sleep, they're now saying. None of this 4 or 5. You know. And the brain gets restored, all sorts of things get systems get restored. That if they're not restored, then every day when we wake up, we're a little bit running more on empty than the day before. And more on empty than the day before that. And over time, we get completely exhausted. So to really practice the meditation, let's say we were on a 10-day retreat, or a 2-week retreat, or a 3-month retreat, the first thing would be get some sleep. Don't stay up late and meditate. Just get some good sleep. And then we'll talk about wakefulness, you know? But wakefulness as a metaphor doesn't work very well if we're exhausted. And if we are exhausted, it's really important to be aware of it. It's really important to be aware of it, because if we're not aware of it, then we will really run on empty until we crash and burn. And burn out or, you know, whatever. But if we are aware of it, then we can modulate our life and make choices to like, hey, don't meditate, sleep. And then when you've gotten enough sleep, then try falling awake. Anybody else care to talk about your experience with the body scan? Please.
What I experienced mostly is several times of just experience, like not sleeping. Mm-hmm. It was quite pleasant actually. And just coming back after some time, not knowing where I'm going. And even in the exercise before with the raisin, mm-hmm. in the small time the raisin was in my mouth, it was like disappearing for a second and coming back. Mm-hmm. What happened? And when I first started practicing mindfulness, it happened a lot, and I was like, wow, I'm a very good meditator, because I'm like, the 45 minutes goes by, and I'm like, where I've been, and everything's good, and I don't mind moving. And it took me a while to realize I was practicing my dissociation skill, and still, I want to ask what to do about this. Because mostly I know that I'm back only when I'm back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not before I'm going.
Not when you're off. Yeah.
Not when I'm off.
Well, thank you. That's a beautiful question, and I'm really glad that that you brought it up. Again, because it happens a lot. And you, as you probably know, there are a lot of different ways to ground yourself so that the tendency to dissolve and dissociate is minimized. One way is if you're lying down in the body scan to really be aware of the points of contact with the floor, because the floor can orient you and keep you in your body and in the present moment. Even if it's uncomfortable, it's orienting. Then there's the ceiling or the room. The more you can be aware of the space of the room, the more that will keep you connected rather than dissociated. And again, it's a practice. It's like a muscle. You know it well. The mind sort of tends to go into that cloud, and then you come back. When you come back, you know you're back. But maybe you don't know that you're going off. So you can investigate that. And the grounding methods of staying in touch with the body, in touch with the room, the space, and so forth, can give you early warning signs that, in fact, you're going to blip out. And then you can choose not to, by maybe connecting with the breath in that moment, or with the feeling of the body as a whole. So again, it's like, as soon as you can be aware that you're going to leave, you can choose not to. Or when you come back, you can choose to stay for a while. And over time, the choosing to stay will begin to become your default mode. So rather than going off being like the escape route, there you don't need an escape anymore, and you become more at home in your own skin. Again, it's a practice. Usually we learn the dissociation skill for a reason. And so it's been very helpful in certain ways to dissociate up to a point. And now you're learning how to reclaim yourself, if that's true. Please, yeah.
I think I've been doing a lot of work with it. And a lot of the reasons that are underneath it are solved. But the tendency of the mind is still there.
Yeah.
It's very subtle, it's even for a split of a second.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there.
Well, this is wonderful that you're bringing awareness to that and to increasingly subtle aspects of that tendency.
Mm-hmm.
That is the practice. I mean, if you keep it up, it will continue to teach you what you need to know. Thank you. And interestingly enough, no one else can do this for us. You know, no one else can do that for you. We have to do a certain kind of interior work for ourselves. You know, your doctor can't do it, your lover can't do it, your therapist can't do it. We have a certain amount of interior work that we have to do ourselves. And it's very beautiful that you found it, because a lot of people don't know about this. And it can give you, I mean, many people say, it gave me back my life. They were, you know, and they're not kidding. So it's very powerful. And the more you practice in this way, the more useful you are, not just to yourself, but to other people. Because you become the embodiment, in some sense, of the possibility of healing. And of being a whole integrated rather than disintegrated person. And a lot of the times we tend to be disintegrated rather than integrated. And it requires a certain kind of discipline to integrate the pieces. So thank you for mentioning that.
I only want to say that there will be another chance to practice this, the body scanning, because I was too occupied with my need to go to urinate. So if you do it, please next time tell us and give us enough time to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
Do what we have to do, okay?
Yeah. Okay. I thought I did say that. I said, we're going to have a body scan, and if you need to go to the bathroom, this would be a good time to go. Didn't I say that? Okay, so you see, even if I say things, no one hears. But yes, that can be an interesting experience, too. Yes, please, come up. Get in close and raise it up. Yeah. If you want to find the most comfortable way to sit, if you're sitting on the floor, right?
on the nutrition. Okay.
It's not better on the chair.
It's all you put that?
It's not better on the
chair. No, these chairs are not the best chairs for sitting in the put it mildly. And you're very high up. What do you do with your legs? You need to come back.
Anybody else have a question?
It might be more about the same, but my brain, so I am asking.
Yes, of course.
This week is not a good one for me. I had a few car accidents and I have chronic pain here.
Okay.
This pain is excellent. This body scan is fine. This pain was unbearable.
Really?
And I think you went too fast for my place because I was changing positions and no, I like this slow thing.
Yeah.
So try to help me even without pain. But this time, I didn't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
And I then kept on, eventually, when I saw I didn't find anything to my pain, I
you stayed
went
with
on.
It. Yes.
Yes, but I lost a couple of places.
Parts, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I would like to know what to do in these bad days of low pain, of low back pain.
Well, first of all, in terms of body positioning,
yes.
Were you bending your knees? Did you have your knees bent or were you flat up? What's that? You tried everything.
Yeah.
So nothing was helping. Reposition. Lying on your side. What about now? Now you're fine. So is there something about lying down that creates this?
When it's bad.
When it's bad. Okay.
Not every day, but yes.
Okay.
And it becomes unbearable. So I went on. Keep on, but it didn't help, to say the least.
Right, so you're saying the body scan didn't help, it was still unbearable all the way through.
Up here.
Up there it was helpful, but
not down here.
Okay. Well,
it's a very important place for the position.
So,
crucial.
Yes, obviously. So, do you do anything like yoga?
No, yoga is stopped after the accident.
You stopped that after the accident. So you.
I'm doing Qigong.
Qigong?
Yes.
Okay.
Meditation. So in the bad days, I can't sit like this. In the good days,
you can.
So I have to sit.
Okay.
These chairs are not there.
No, these chairs are horrible. So my suggestion is you just do the best you can. When we do yoga, don't do it.
No.
Okay, and that's true for anybody who knows that they should, or listen very carefully to your body. Now, there's certain things that you could do, probably, that would be helpful. Do you do pelvic tilts, for instance?
No.
Pelvic tilts? Do you know what they are? Well, if you have back pain, pelvic tilts can be very, very, can be your best friend. I'm sure you do know what they are. I'll demonstrate them to you.
Okay, thank you.
Because we're going to do them anyway in a little while. Okay, so stay up here. Don't go away. So this is a pelvic tilt. I contract my belly. Here, I'll come around. I contract the belly. Now watch what happens to the pelvis. Can you see a small movement in the pelvis? It's going this way. Do you do this?
Yes.
You do this?
Yes.
Okay. So you contract the belly, and that presses the lower back against the floor. Okay?
Without lifting.
Not lifting at all.
Lifting.
Not lifting.
No.
You don't do this?
No. With lifting. I was taught to do
it. No lifting.
No lifting.
Okay, now watch. Okay, so that's one position. This is the other position. Can you see the difference?
Yes, I
can. Okay, so now in this position, there's a little arch and there's room for the hand, okay? So we're going like this.
Okay.
And this is like pelvis, and it's tilting. First this way, then that way. Not lifting.
I understand.
Now,
In physical therapy, this is one of the most powerful things that can be used for rehabilitating the back. First of all, you can do it very, very small, very, very tiny, just almost in your mind. And then gradually, as you practice more, the body will accommodate. Now you can do it in many different positions, not just lying down. You can do it standing. Okay, or get your whole body involved. So this way, you round the back, and then watch my pelvis. Okay, and what you're doing is you're actually freeing up all the vertebrae in the lower back that come out of the pelvis, and you're giving them a little bit more freedom one over the other. And you're also strengthening the muscles and the ligaments that actually hold the whole thing. When that's unstable, if you've had an accident or sometimes like that, it's very weak and unstable. And then when you feel unstable here, you feel anything could destroy you, right? So, of course, then we become very guarded and we're careful and we don't want to do anything. But gradually, as you start to recover this kind of thing, then everything gets stronger, front and back and sides. And that's really... Now, with Qigong, a lot of those movements, you don't do everything. Okay. So you have to basically decide for yourself what your body can... Because nobody knows your body as well as you do. You're the science, world scientist of your body. And so in terms of rehabilitation, you want to sort of begin to very, very carefully experiment with the degrees of freedom, mindfully and lovingly, you know, heartfully, so that you're not getting too enthusiastic and then, yes, I'm going to, you know, rehabilitate my back and you wind up in the hospital.
Right. If 48 hours after, the response comes. It's never on the moment.
So you mean the pain comes 48 hours later?
Yes.
So you don't have...
No, now I have.
Yes.
But
usually, if you overdo it.
Yes.
Can you hear us, by the
way? Yes, I'll hear you.
Come closer. We'll go closer. So if you overdo it, then you feel it. You don't feel it right away. You go out and overdo it.
Yeah.
48 hours later, you're in bed.
Yeah.
Or calling the doctor.
Yeah. No, not the doctor.
No.
No.
Forget about
you.
That.
You.
Okay. Okay, so the basic message is, and we give this message to all of our patients, and we see lots and lots of people with chronic back conditions, and they've had all the medical treatments, and they wouldn't be coming to us if they were better. So they're hurting. And by experimenting bit by bit, mindfully and lovingly, with these kinds of new degrees of freedom, the body's listening and it wants to get stronger. So you're actually nurturing it by doing that. And you're increasing the blood supply through the movements and so forth. You're increasing the synovial fluid in the joints and membranes and so forth. And gradually, and you're also stretching and strengthening things. So don't give up hope. That's the most important thing. I can see you don't. But you might want to play around a little bit with these kinds of principles. Okay. Not necessarily here when we do the yoga, but as best you can. And so gently at first that 48 hours later, nothing will happen.
Okay, promise.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else about the body scan or for that matter, the early morning practice? Remember, we sat, and then we walked, and then we sat, and at first we listened, we were awareness of hearing, and then awareness of the body breathing and sitting. So please, go ahead.
Okay, I've got a question. I need to distinguish something. You talked about... investigating when something comes up, for example, pain or emotion. But I see myself doing practice, for example, when in body scan or breathing, for example. So if something comes up, so I say, okay, let's come back to breathing. So I miss that part of investigating And I see it all the time, and it feels like, okay, things come up, and sometimes those really tough things, it's like running away, it's not dealing with them, it's going back to waiting for the present moment, but when is the limit? When
oh, that's a great question. Is that how you were taught the meditation practice?
Kind of. No, not exactly, actually.
What else?
But I understood it, yes.
What else were you taught, though?
Goenka Vipassana.
Goenka?
A few other techniques.
Okay. Well, thank you. What's your name?
Alon.
Alon?
Yes.
This is a wonderful question. This is a really, really, really important question. Because if you hear the instructions a certain way, you know, like when your mind goes off, notice what's on your mind and then bring it back to the breath. Okay? You've heard that instruction a million times.
Yeah.
Okay? It's the noticing what's on your mind is very important, because otherwise you'll treat what is on your mind as a distraction, and what's really important is the breath. So then you won't pay attention to what's on your mind. You'll just treat it like, oh, I'm a bad meditator, I have to get back to the breath. And that way is the way of not investigating anything. Okay? You're basically exercising a muscle, but you're exercising the muscle of one-pointed focus, concentration. And in concentration, it's a very powerful skill, but there's no wisdom in concentration. There's no wisdom in focus. The wisdom is in the mindfulness. It's in the awareness. So when we watch what's going on in the mind, and the next set of instructions is going to be, okay, don't come back to the breath. Stay with the awareness of thoughts and emotions. This morning, when we were staying with sounds, okay? Sounds were the primary object of attention, right? So it was just sounds and the spaces between sounds. So we're sitting here and we're hearing whatever is coming. And we don't have to go to the breath. We're just being the awareness of hearing.
Even if it feels, can we stop meditating? I don't know, it's not good for you. Or if something comes up and tell me, you're in a bad situation, it's not, just run away. I don't know. That's what it tells me. So.
Did that happen this morning?
It happens all the time in meditation.
Okay, sit down. Sit down. Let's have a conversation about it, if you don't mind, alone.
Okay.
So here you're meditating. I just want to understand it as best I can. So what happens?
For example, something like, I can't explain the word. A feeling that I don't feel good with myself this morning.
Okay.
Tells me. That's what I get out of it. That if I'm going to continue meditating, it won't help me to dissolve it. It's just going to, you know, enhance it more and more. And
okay, so this is thinking, right? You're sitting here, let's say you're focusing on the breath, okay? We're just focusing on the breath. So you can feel your breath moving in and out, right? Then this thought comes up.
Or feeling, or emotion, yeah.
Or emotion. And what exactly is it saying?
It could be something strong with me. It doesn't say anything. It just doesn't feel right to continue. To go to the reading, because it tells me...
There's something else here that needs to pay attention.
Exactly.
You need to pay attention.
I get my attention.
Okay, so this is exactly, you know, this is core. So then, if something is pulling your attention, maybe it's the lower back, or maybe it's what you're describing. If something is pulling your attention, and you keep coming back to the breath, and it keeps calling you up, because it wants your attention, then bring your attention to that. And hold that in awareness, whether it's an emotion or a thought. Can we just be aware of it and hold it in awareness? Have you tried doing that? Or are you mostly going back to your breath and then feeling like you're in a struggle?
Usually it comes with a story, so I'm saying to myself, this might be another story, I need to come back to the present moment, to the reading.
Okay. It's all right if there's a story. There's nothing wrong with stories. You can always bring awareness to the story. So think of the meditation practice as a way to actually develop intimacy with your own mind and what it's doing. So your mind is bothering you in a certain way because it's agitated and it's developing these stories or emotions or whatever, and they're not comfortable, are they?
No.
They're not comfortable. So you know, and you hope, I mean, why did you start meditating in the first place? Why all of a sudden meditation instead of, you know, parasailing or something?
I think the present moment is fascinating to live in the present moment.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it feels like I can be in a pub, for example, drinking, and
yeah.
And everybody want to be, you know, in the moment, just drinking and enjoying the moment, but sometimes a lot of things disturb me in this moment. And what I learned from this practice a lot of times is, okay, just stay in the present moment.
Yes.
Go back to the beer.
Go back to?
To the beer.
To the beer.
But for the long term, it doesn't hurt.
Okay. Now, this is a new one. I haven't heard that. This is an advanced form of meditation practice. Going to the bar and trying to stay present while drinking alcohol. It's a very advanced form of meditation. You have to be truly unattached. So I don't know if this is for beginners, you know. But
the fear of being.
The fear of being, yeah. So I think the most important thing is that you're listening to yourself. And there are parts of yourself that are trying to speak to you in one way or another. And, of course, alcohol is usually used to drown those parts out. We don't want to listen to the unhappy parts of ourselves.
That's not a good example.
What's that?
It's not a good example.
It wasn't a good example?
Okay, yeah.
Maybe a really good example. I don't know. But, so, you're right. This can be an incredibly powerful way to integrate your life, just as we were saying before. But in order to do that, you don't want to just stay with the breath and hold on to it like a lifesaver. Sometimes that's really valuable. Just hang on to the breath. When things are extremely stressful, just hang on to the breath for dear life. But these other things that are coming up, especially if they're not coming up just in the bar, but they're coming up everywhere, and they have narrative associated with them, but they also make you feel unhappy, which sounds like you do, put out the welcome mat for them. Let them come and watch them without the alcohol. I'm not joking. Watch them without the alcohol. Don't try to attenuate them or numb yourself out to them. Just see them. And if it's too painful to watch, just kind of go like this. Okay, just a little glimpse. Just put your little toe in the water. Don't jump in the deep end of the swimming pool. Just, okay? And then, and then keep it there a little longer. And then a little longer. It's the same thing of many, you know, brief moments, many times, of just inquiry, of openness. And that's where the investigation comes in. Just investigate as long as you can tolerate it. Sometimes it's so painful, you can only tolerate it for a very short period of time, then you come back to the breath. Just as a refuge, not as an escape. But you're right, many people hear the meditation instructions, no matter how skillfully they are given, and people use them to escape from their emotions, from their feelings, and just become terrific at breathing. But it's never about the breath. It's about kindness towards yourself with the embrace of awareness. And so that means you have to look at what you most don't want to look at and listen to what you most don't want to listen. But you can't jump in all at once. You have to sort of be very gentle. And we will, this evening, if not before, practice in that way, okay? I'll be giving you the instructions for that.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, you want to come up here?
Actually, okay?
Yeah.
Actually, it's not a question about this morning, but about the instructions of yesterday night.
Okay.
Is it okay?
Of course.
And it comes to many experiences of this sort. Is there the instruction before going to sleep, be aware of three
breaths.
Now, when I have problems getting sleep, I am trying this technique. What happens is that the awareness just prevents me going to sleep.
Yeah.
Because I ask myself, what goes to sleep? And I think this is the awareness. And if I keep the awareness awake, so...
You won't go to sleep.
Yes. So how do I overcome this problem?
Did I cause the problem?
No.
By saying that?
I think it's my problem.
So it's not just last night?
No.
Okay, so you're having a problem falling asleep, is that right?
Sometimes.
Do you fall asleep during the day, during the meditation? Did you fall asleep in the body scan?
Mm-hmm.
No, okay. So last night I gave the homework, and I'm glad you brought it up. Three breaths in bed, gentle, light touch, easy. One, two, three, good night. How many of you did that? How many of you remember? Okay. Well, I hope it didn't keep you awake. The idea was to sort of, you know, not get into sort of deep awareness, which will just, as you say, wake you up. But just a nice, gentle sense of the body breathing, and you let go, and you're gone. And how many of you did it this morning when you woke up? Okay, wonderful. So now you're asking a more general question. It wasn't about last night.
Yes.
Did it keep you up last night?
Yes.
Or did you go to sleep
yes.
last night?
No, it kept me up.
Okay, and was it my instruction that kept you up, or it's just that you're in the habit of...
No, I don't know.
You don't know, okay.
I don't know if it's... I try to keep your instruction.
Yeah.
And I know that when I have no stories in my head...
Yeah, you go to sleep.
And no inner, you know, disturbances, and I go to sleep without any...
Right.
Technique.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this time maybe there were problems.
Okay. Also, you're in a new place.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in a room by yourself, or did you have roommates?
I had a roommate, but no problem.
Wasn't the problem? Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, all of us have difficulties with falling asleep sometimes. And so it's a good thing to investigate. Like, are you under a lot of stress in your life?
Yes.
Because very often when we are really stressed, the first thing that goes is sleep. It's the first thing. So it may be that until you regulate the stress, or it goes away in some way, that sleep will continue to be something of a problem. So it can tell you something about your lifestyle and, you know, maybe the need to change certain things if you want to, you know, extend. I'm still jet lagged, so I, you know, I'm not the right person to be talking about sleep at the moment.
Yes, a big change in my life.
Yes, so you're going through a big change in your life.
So I am in the air.
Yeah, you're being...
I don't feel...
You don't feel grounded.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you may have just explained why you're having a little bit of trouble sleeping. Did you get any sleep last night?
Yes.
You fell asleep finally.
Yes.
But going to sleep is a problem. Yeah. Okay, well, I don't have any magical suggestions for you. Just to be patient and gentle with yourself. Yeah. And, you know, the more you accommodate to the stressful changing conditions, whatever they are, and they resolve themselves, the more you'll very likely go to sleep more easily. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, please. And this will be the last one, because we're going to move from this into change
who make a transition.
Or it's a question about something else that I hope you will be able to help me. I find this practice very useful to me. It brings me back to my body. I feel more alive, more in the present moment. Mm-hmm. But I've been told again and again that the source of my dukkha is attachment. And I really don't know how to, you know, to deal with attachment. I mean, it's tremendously hard to not be attached as a human being to certain things.
Yeah, of course. Are you a parent?
No.
Do you have children? Well, if you have children, you'll be very attached to them.
Well, I'm attached to other things as well. And it's
yeah, right. You don't need to be a parent to be attached, right.
I mean, this practice is very helpful, but to a certain degree, because then comes the attachment, and then I don't know what to do.
Well, can you hold the attachments in awareness? Well, give me an example of being attached. One that you can say without, you know, that you feel comfortable talking about. What do you notice that you're attached to?
In general, that when I talk about my emotions, so it's things that connect to my past, and then I've been told it's attachment, you know, it's your past. You have to drop it, but it's part of my, what brought me here.
Yeah.
So how can you really drop everything and...
Well, you don't have to drop anything. All you need to drop is the attachment. You don't have to drop your past. You have to, you know, the invitation is to just see how much it is, you're clinging to it, and how much it is, in some sense, an obstacle for you. I mean, is it that you see that attachment is the source of dukkha, or someone told you that and you believe it?
I've been told too, but I...
So you have first-person experience of it, first-hand experience of it.
Yes, when somebody told me, I was more aware of it, and I agreed with it.
Okay.
But I don't know how to...
But that's an intellectual agreement. See, the important thing about practice is to just see it in everything. Like when you did the body scan just now, were you attached to anything? Were you attached to it being over, or attached to?
It made me feel more grounded.
What's that? It made you feel more grounded.
Yeah, because I felt the body.
Okay, and were you impatient for it to be over, or anything? You just and did you fall asleep, or you stayed awake?
It was a strange mood. I wasn't sure if I'm asleep or I'm awake.
Right.
It was like very, very, very relaxed.
Very relaxed, right? Well, usually when you're not sure whether you're asleep or awake, you're asleep. To a first approximation, or in some very vague, you know, space. In terms of the attachment, my suggestion is to just start watching how attached you are. First of all, you're not the only one. Every single one of us is totally attached to everything. There's nothing wrong with that as long as we know it, and as long as we see it, then we can choose to not be so tight with it, to not identify so much with whatever it is, our likes, our dislikes, our story, our anger, anything, that so that we can see how we contribute to our own suffering.
So if I look at it, it loosens the attachment?
Yes. If you look at it and you see the attachment, it will loosen the attachment. Yeah. And you can invite yourself to loosen the attachment. If attachment or non-attachment is difficult, just notice how attached you are to things. Just let that become, in some sense, the object of your attention, your attachment, and then see it everywhere. And then you don't have to fix it, you don't have to change it, you don't have to do anything with it. Just hold the attachment in a loving, kind way, in awareness. And if you do that as a regular practice, your relationship to attachment is going to change. And the attaching itself will loosen. Okay? Thank you. It's a wonderful question.